and I have a client who wants to play Barry. Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg? Are you shitting me?
Well, we ran this through our marketing division, and if we brought Mark on, the studios would be in a bidding war tomorrow.
Well, this would be a great way to get Janice's story out there.
Crank it up. Let's dive into the deep end. Welcome back, analysis listeners. Spencer Davis.
Oh.
What's happening, man? Welcome back in. Welcome to the podcast.
But I was just going to say, it's always weird just to like be back. And I'm like, do I hype myself? I don't know. Do I blow my own air horn? I'm not really sure how to do this. So.
Yeah, we have the siren, so we can sound the siren for you. We'll give you a nice long
That's
siren.
Right. That's nice. Right.
But yeah, so you came on. I love having you on for all different types of topics. Just you're a great guest. You're always incredibly thoughtful. And you've been on. We talked about Leonardo DiCaprio and A Case for Leonardo DiCaprio. The last time you were on, we were talking about Better Call Saul. And
right.
Shows that are popular, but just slightly off the beaten path. Still a very beaten path, but not the most beaten path. And I think Better Call Saul, you know, it's kind of niche. With a very large audience. And today we're going to be talking about something I think that's in a similar place in the zeitgeist right now, which is Barry, the final season of Barry, season 4. It was only a 30-something episodes, half-hour bangers. But, you know, the final episode, almost in its own tragic Barry way, came out the same night as Succession, which was all the water cooler talk. And I saw you post, you were saying, hey, something along the lines of, I know Succession's happening and everyone's really excited, but I want to throw some love to Barry. So let's just start there. What were you feeling as we were starting to wrap up and what kind of love did you want to give the show?
I think, you know, if you're asking me this right now, which you are, because this is a podcast and we are recording, I would say right now, this is a good start. I'm feeling grateful. I think I'm grateful that this show existed. I'm so grateful for the risks that it took along the way, and it took so many risks, and I know we'll get into several of them. I think I'm also grateful that it ended. I think I'm grateful that they called it off when they did. I think there's something really beautiful about the one and dones or the four seasons and we're through. It used to be that television just kind of ran out of steam and you asked yourself, whatever happened to so-and-so? And it was very rare that you ever got the cheers moment in their finale when they're like, sorry, we're closed. You know, it wasn't very often that like a really hot show went off the air on its own terms. And even that show, you know, not to make this a cheers podcast,
evening,
but like, even that show was, you know, taken off because Ted Danson was moving on, right? And so there was a little bit of something behind the scenes happening there. But with Barry, it feels like it was always meant to happen this way. And I think I really appreciate how thoughtful it was. I think I also appreciate something that you and I were talking about just a second ago, the fact that they're half-hour episodes means that you could technically now watch the entire series in 16 hours. Mm-hmm. Over a weekend, you can just rewatch Barry. And I love that because for me, to do the same thing with Lost or The West Wing, I feel like I would dedicate months to that. And I love this idea that the way that Alec Berg and Bill Hader structured the show just allows you to take the entire wacky, wild, sometimes brutal marathon in one or two sittings altogether. I think that's really astounding.
Yeah, it's really the 30 minutes, and you think about it, it's 30 minutes and there's four seasons. You say only four seasons, because like you said, there's these shows that The Office comes to mind as something like once Michael Scott leaves, you get these like four just lazy, terrible seasons. And then finally everyone comes back in for the finale and things like that. And there's always Seinfeld, and Seinfeld talked about nine seasons, and he was basically equated it to a stand-up. And he's like, you have a stand-up that comes out and they're white hot for a half hour, but then they hang around too long and it ends up being an hour and 20 minute show with, you know, 30 good minutes in it. And the audience ends up leaving saying, man, he overstayed his welcome. He went on too long. And that's the last impression that they have of the set. And so he's like, I never wanted the show to be that type of comedian. And so he's like, I wanted to get out. 9 seasons even now compared to Barry is, you know, is double. It's Scorsese. So they really had a very deliberate story that they wanted to have. And it really does feel like Hollywood's getting more mindful of these series and really limited with a capital L, keeping them limited, contained, like succinct storytelling that leaves the audience satisfied. I think that's where they went with this show. And obviously both of us found it to be successful.
I think they also, I think you're totally right. And I think television studios are also recognizing the benefits of acting like a book, how an audience will buy in if they can see the end in sight. They know that they're not only that, but I think they also appreciate the confidence of creators who know how they're going to end. The moment you say we have a 5-year plan, everyone goes, oh, thank God, we're heading somewhere. Right. Mm-hmm. Even with Andor, they originally had a 5-year plan. Now it's gone down to a 2-season plan. And for me, I am more likely to watch season 2 of Andor, not just because I like it on a quality level, but because I know Tony Gilroy is getting exactly what he wants done at exactly the time he wants it done. And I think there's something really awesome about that. And I think. Thankfully, television studios, and I do think we have Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, who argued for their 6 seasons and were done with Lost. I do think we have them to thank for this. That end in sight mentality, I think it will always help an audience buy in, especially when we're dealing with a show that is so tonally different than anything else on television, which I really think Barry just kind of occupies a corner all its own. I think it started off Coen Brothers-esque. I think there was some Lynchian departures that Bill Hader tried out very early on directorially. And then I think it just became its own thing. And I think now it's going to become that show that laid the groundwork for whatever comes next. I think folks are going to say, I think studios are going to say, yeah, we want something kind of like Barry.
It's almost like you have to take risks to break new ground. But remember when it was in the 80s, it was all jacked up action stars, you had Stallone and Arnold, and you know, that was what action meant. And then you had Die Hard come along and it was mocked in the theaters because it's like, oh, this everyman, like how could he kick ass? And then that ended up being a thing where then they were like, oh, can we get something where there's like an everyman action star? And then it was like Die Hard on a bus, Speed, it was Die Hard on a thing. It was like they just kept trying to redo Die Hard in different packages. And so it's like, yeah, maybe this will be its own now kind of genre where it's like, where it's part horror, but part commentary on Hollywood, but part action or Coen Brothers, dark comedy, serial comedy. So it really has all, it's like a Frankenstein of different genres. And it's almost like on an episode by episode basis, you're going to get pretty wild tone changes.
Well, and I think that's even something, you're absolutely right. And I think that's also something that you can watch the show find itself as it goes along its run. I think if you look at season 1, the episode titles, if you look at those, it was chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3. They were almost kind of mimicking Gene Cousineau's book, right? Season 2, they drop that. Season 3, the titles start getting into all lowercase. And season 4, they continue that. Even in the way that they titled their episodes, you can kind of find them refining what the show even is to them. I don't know how much forethought was put into that or if they were just kind of making it up as they went, but you could watch them change their aesthetics and mold the show to fit that. And I think that's what's so great about something like this too, that's creative driven in the sense of like having the same person at the helm and the star of the show for all 4 years. There's something about always keeping it wet clay that I think is really attractive. I'll also say too, you know, you were talking about sometimes it's a entertainment satire, sometimes it's horror. I also recognize that like the satire and the funny and the goofy was what people originally signed on for. And I think we watched that there was quite a drop off. There was,
oh yeah,
there was quite a division, especially with season 3. The moment folks went, I'm traumatized. I did not expect this show to go where it went.
In that confinement center. And that's really when he decided, he understands or starts to feel, at least, not that this is truth, but the only way to survive is through violence. You know, Hank has to learn that lesson in that, but there's like panthers ripping people to shreds. Like, it really is very scary. Right. There's a lot of, even just in this season, which it isn't what you would necessarily consider funny. Like, it's not Bill Hader in an acting class misinterpreting the tone of Glengarry Glen Ross, which was a bit that I love. Bree is like, a set of steak knives, third place, you're fired. It was like I just loved that kind of goofy bit of all these shitty actors that are basically just doing impressions of Gary Oldman in their acting class. And it was just like, yep. Oh, this is great. This is really fun satire, like you're saying. And then this season, you don't really get much of that. And the comedy comes almost in circumstantial, almost situational gags, like Barry going to the gun store and he just says guns, and the person looks up from a magazine and they're like, well, which one? And it's like, very clearly they're making a comment on just the gun policies in the country. And then he's just walking through the store through children. People are totally unfazed, and then he's got to try to get into his car with like two machine guns on his back, and it's like, that's where the comedy is now, you know. And it's totally different than where we were season one.
And it's interesting too, right? I think that's why I appreciate Barry so much, and why it just pokes a part of my brain that no other show does. I think the closest one that did it was Better Call Saul.
Better Call
Saul.
There's
this feeling of you're laughing, and sometimes it's because the thing is funny. Sometimes it's in pure discomfort. And the fact that it can say, well, as long as you're still laughing. Mm-hmm. I think about that too. Like, what other show on television could have had, you know, an entire gang of, what were they? I don't remember necessarily the gangs that they meshed together, but this whole group of criminals that are standing in a silo of sand taking a selfie, and then they're smothered to death.
Yeah.
What other show could pull that off?
And or it's constantly surprising you. You're always like,
100%.
What? With the moment that Barry has on the couch, where you're, oh, wow. You know, and you're just kind of like constantly going, oh my God. You know, and it's like, you're constantly putting you in that space.
I think Bill Hader was even talking about the idea of, you know, in episode two, especially when NoHo Hank and Cristobal were putting together this gang and their new army, essentially, to start selling sand. They originally just had it in kind of a conference room, and they went, what if this is in a Dave & Buster's? And suddenly it heightens it in a totally different way. You have Hank, who kind of steps out of frame and then has to run around the circular table to catch up with the camera that meta is there. Mm-hmm. You know, and I find like there was a blend of comedy that only this series could pull off. And for that, I think it alone earns a spot on the shelf of some of the best shows of the last decade, for sure. I also want to say too, I think I'm also grateful that it ended for the same reason that I think I'm grateful Succession ended, especially since they ended on the same night, which is there's this feeling of, I don't know how much those characters could have grown. Right. Mm-hmm. If anything, there's this feeling with Barry, the same feeling with the Roy family. At some point, they're just going to be spinning their wheels because they refuse to change. And we love them because they are so predictable. And we know exactly how they'll act in situations. But at some point, after a show like Breaking Bad, where it was all about transformation and decay, I think we're also sometimes, you know, the Tony Sopranos of the worlds, the Barry Berkmans, at some point you do have to put a bullet in it. Yeah, I was going to say put a pin in it, but I think put a bullet in is more fitting, because at some point you're going to run out of story. You're going to run out of steam, even with something like BoJack Horseman, which was not a reference I expected to make. At some point near the end of that series, you can kind of feel it running out of gas because his cycles of addiction just keep repeating themselves. And thankfully it ends right around the time you start getting exhausted. So I think I'm also grateful that they ended, because if Barry was going to refuse to change and yet demand redemption, I like the way that they, you know,
let's
brought an end.
Yeah, let's talk about those endings. And, you know, I think it does. There's so much talk about audiences and whether or not they feel the show stuck the landing. You go back to Game of Thrones, some of these other shows. Oh, they blew it. It wasn't satisfying to the audience, things like that. And this show, it was really hard to have expectations because it kept keeping you off balance. But really, at the end, you know, these characters all to me had pretty grim endings. And a lot of it was these people were just unredeemable assholes. And they, it really ended up being, if you look at yourself and you were able to basically look at yourself with transparency and actually admit your true faults, those people were spared. And yes, all the people that, you know, continued to deny the reality that they had created, those people were all the ones that were sacrificed, you know. And I think that the having the backdrop be Hollywood and having acting and creation, and you can basically create your own false narrative of yourself, that ended up being the coin flip on who made it through the series and who didn't. And, you know, for me, what are your takes on that? And who do you think had the most tragic end of the people who had tragic ends?
No, I mean, I'm so glad you picked up on that whole idea of those who came to terms with who they are lived and those who didn't died. I think that you could tell it was such a conscious effort on their part. You know, the finale itself, I think I liked 50% of it. Okay. And by that I mean, you know, for someone like Fugues, the Raven, I found myself
wishing that became a thing.
Yeah, I love that. I love that he found himself through this. Again, he kind of took on a role in and of himself. This guy who was telling Barry to stay out of acting class actually found himself through this role that he found in prison.
Shit, I didn't really think about that. Yeah, him playing a character, basically. Yeah.
Exactly, 100%. Yeah, by playing this character, he realized he was the soldier he was always meant to be, not the mentor. I would have loved to have felt a little bit of that character development outside of that final monologue he gives. I feel like they really kind of backloaded it. And I think this is also just, I will say real quick before I go into the rest of the endings, I think this is also probably one of the things that backfire when you only give yourself 30 minutes an episode, is you have to shove a lot of plot into a very small bag. So I felt like the Raven, I wish we could have seen a little bit more of that character development on screen. Similarly, I'm not sure how I feel about Noho Hank, and not necessarily how I feel as an audience member. Obviously, it's very sad, but like storytelling wise, I don't really know what they're trying to say with how Noho Hank goes out. You know, sure, he dies in denial that he had any part to play in Cristobal's death. But, you know, I always look back at I always appreciate when shows kind of tie a character's ending to their beginning. Mm-hmm. And I guess I had no sense of how it completed a thing. He just sort of, the way he died was in a very tragic pose, but it was a little blurry for me what they were trying to get at. Whereas with Sally, it felt 100% earned. This idea that this woman who had been, you know, looking for the dream role, she probably wanted an Oscar at some point. The idea that for her, store-bought flowers that are dying in the passenger seat becomes enough. I thought that was incredible transformation that we did see all along the way. I thought her coming to terms with I'm a bad mother was actually a great example of a payoff of a bunch of character development that we had seen throughout the years. And I will say there's something really fitting about, first of all, I think Barry had to die. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that there's any way around that.
Even though I wanted to make it.
100%, right? Mm-hmm. He's our main character, and you know, part of us wants redemption for him, which I'll get to in a second. I also think Gene being the one to kill him, there's justice to that. There's something really kind of like beautifully cynical about the way that Barry has been looking for redemption all his life. And in death, he gets it through a Hollywood skewed movie. Yeah. I think there's something very interesting about this idea of to the victor go the spoils, the victors write the history, mm-hmm. and Hollywood then puts it on celluloid. I think there's something really interesting to that.
Well, and then so they rush out, they use the trauma and they rush out a story that's completely inaccurate just to capitalize on the traumatic
right.
event. Yeah.
The idea that they even call, you know, the mask collector, that idea yeah. that they even name it something that has, like, you have to kind of dig back to season three when Gene said that in his show to even remember what it's referring to. But what a horrific title that sounds like. I do think it's interesting. Gene gets what he wants. He gets the revenge he wants, but at the cost of his entire life that he'll now spend in prison. Barry gets what he wants, redemption, but in order to get it, he had to die. I think there's something really kind of poetic about that. But I think it leaves us asking, do we want happy endings for our main character? Is that always the right thing?
No, I would have been disappointed if Barry scoots out and ends up blah, 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 San Juan Teneo on a beach with Sally or something. Like, I think it would have been, it just would have gone against everything that the show, tones of the show. And so it's like, no, it's you don't need the character to get away at the end. And I think that's okay.
How'd you feel about John's reaction at the end to seeing his own father's story, that smile at the very end? What was your reaction?
I am happy that Barry's son is, even if it's in a false reality, that Barry's son is happy and is going to have a connection with his dad. Going back to Breaking Bad, I thought one of the most tragic things was how Walt's son ends up leaving that story with nothing but contempt for his father, you know? And so I was like, that's tragic that man's son is going to hate his memory for the rest of his life. And so, you know, Barry did a lot of awful things and definitely needed to be held accountable. And I think you see that there on the couch with Gene at the end, but that at that point, too much had been done. It was just too late. He'd had too many second chances. And so it was time for him to pay the toll. But I guess I was happy that John was connected with his father. How about you?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I was very glad that we did not end the series with John being a psychopath. I really thought that's where they were going to go, is cycles of violence.
I wanted to ask you, because that was something that I wasn't clear on, is when Barry goes to L.A. to kill Gene. And Sally's left and she's pouring the liquor in John's glass and he ends up passed out on the couch and she lays on the couch and the gun falls off, or she lays on the bed and the gun falls off the bed. And all of a sudden the attacker is in a very similar to Barry in The Mask a couple seasons back when he was trying to take out the Taekwondo instructor. But it was like very spooky scene. But then she's locked in the hotel. She's locked in the room with the door, and all of a sudden you hear there's like a conflict going on outside where he's like, this kid's not breathing, no way, get off of me, there's something in my eye. But then she comes back out later and he's on the couch. Do you know what happened there?
No, and that's going to be one of those sequences that honestly I'm kind of waiting for the jury. I feel like the jury's still out on it. Bill Hader hasn't really done much commentary on that particular episode. And I will say it's hard to know exactly what happened. I mean, especially since this individual hypothetically drove a truck into the trailer and tore a hole through the wall and then drove off. And yet I have something in my eye is exactly what the man that Sally killed said. So it's hard to know what's in her head and what's actually happening. The fact that whoever was out there, I honestly, I would lean on that was what a panic attack feels like. And that it was all in Sally's head.
So there was nothing but that actually happened with the house.
Unless she tore it apart herself, if my interpretation is right. But yeah, that was one of those blank spots that I felt like really could have been at the center of a lot more discourse. And I'll be honest with you too. You know, I was one of the people who thought the time jump was going to turn out to be a dream, and then it turned out not to be. Mm-hmm. And yet so much of Barry, especially in the last two seasons, deals with dream logic. And so it did feel to me like that was Sally's experience. That was Sally's trauma bubbling up. But honestly, I'd have to go back and rewatch it to even get a sense of it. I was just kind of letting it wash over me, and I haven't watched it again since.
Yeah. But okay, the panic based attack on makes more sense than it being literal.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was thinking literally. 100%. No, mm-hmm. I thought at first it was going to be the employee that she helped get fired from the diner. But when he kind of skedaddled after and not even touching John, I felt like it had to have been more of kind of an internal struggle for her, for sure.
Okay, that makes sense. But, yeah. You know, in the end, Jean is undone again. And you were talking about the cyclical nature of these characters and how they were going to keep repeating their mistakes and their toxic traits. And I think even Jean, what really undoes him and puts him in the place that he ends up is his ego with Daniel Day-Lewis being cast as him in the movie. The idea of Daniel Day-Lewis and the idea of Mark Wahlberg, and then he starts to lead people to believe that, you know, the narrative isn't correct. But it's just like, mm-hmm. it's like that, like Gene just can't help himself with
And I will say, you know, when I look back at the show, I feel like the first two seasons are just really masterful. The third one takes a huge swing, and for me, on like a visceral kind of storytelling level, might be my favorite. When I look back on season four, I think I'm gonna have a little trouble with the time jump in general, and I think that includes Gene's living in a kibbutz for 7 years. He comes back, he says, I don't want you to make this movie. And then he kind of falls back into his old ways pretty quickly. I think I was maybe a little disappointed that he returned to his old programming so quickly, because I felt like the show was actually throwing a wrench in its own gears in a really exciting way. And frankly, I think for me, that felt like old Gene. It felt like, well, Daniel Day-Lewis is going to do it. Well, you know what? As a matter of fact, the narrative is much more complicated. It felt a little bit like a rehashing of what happened with the journalist. I don't know. That's just my own personal taste. At the end of the day, it did still feel like something Gene would do. But new Gene, we just never got a chance to really get to know him before he just reverted back to his old ways, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, it's his ending, very tragic, probably the most tragic. And yeah. I thought Sally, the actress who played Sally, was just incredible. But I think she had some of the more hopeful moments, even though that in itself is very tragic. The scenes with her and her son, and her being totally emotionally void and unable to the parent in any sort of impactful way, was that those were really sad scenes. Those were really, really tough. Yeah.
And even her, you know, her final line to him, you know, he says, I love you. And she says, was it good? You know, even then she's still looking for validation, which is a great example of a character who's changed and yet still has those insecurities buried just beneath the surface. I really do think Sally, for as many think pieces as has been written about that character, I think she probably got the strongest arc of the entire finale, frankly, just because of where they leave her and how earned it felt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So any final thoughts? Anything else that you want to ring out here?
You know, I just want to say, I mean, I think we'd be remiss to not talk about for just a second about the fact that what a tour de force Bill Hader's direction is on this show. I think, I mean, it's well documented that he came out to Hollywood to be a director. He was very much a film guy. He, you know, he grew up watching, went through college watching Criterion collections. And I think it's really, really interesting that from the jump, and I think you can see other filmmakers really embracing him, the fact that he's won in the first three seasons, he won Best Director of a Comedy Series all 3 years for the pilot, for Ronnie Lilly, and then for 7-10 North. And he might even win again if you know, he doesn't lose to the director of The Bear, you know, or someone like that. But I think I will say sometimes I think his own filmmaking sensibilities maybe took a front seat to what the scene maybe actually needed. But visually, I just thought it didn't look like anything else on television either. And I just found his use of space and his use of dream logic and sometimes cartoon logic, things that, you know, they, it felt a little Coen Brothers-esque in the way that even some characters died, and the way that he got out of hijinks sometimes felt like Looney Tunes, and yet it fit somehow, and he just captured it, I thought, perfectly. So I just wanted to say that real quick. I think when we look back, this will be the beginning of a very incredible filmmaking career from one of his generation's best. I really do think Bill Hader's going to be a director of note in films in the coming decades, for sure.
Yeah, visually, it's a really beautiful show to watch, and they really leaned on a lot of the visual cues for the humor at the end. And I'm thinking about the bazooka scene with you know, with NoHo, and then just watching that whole thing escalate down the hill, and then you're up on top of the hill from Fuchs's point of view, but you're watching NoHo running around down there on the phone. And there's just a lot of really cool things that they were constantly adding in. I think about in season two when he's with his Marine buddies and they think they're going to go do that raid, and then all of a sudden the car gets jacked up, and there's all these really cool moments. And I guess that was one of the last things I'll say, is I was hoping for one more raid with Barry to go and free. And I was kind of hoping like Blaze of Glory, like sacrifice himself for his son or something. Like that's kind of where I was. And I'm happy with how it ended. And I think it's actually more interesting than just kind of Blaze of Glory raid. But I did really like the way that they shot that scene in season two when he goes to the monastery or wherever they have that big shootout in. And it's like, oh, cool, we're going to get one last shootout. And then it ends up, he's not the central part of the conflict, but it's actually people arguing about him, and they blow each other away. So
right. That idea that he's a virus that's infected other people, and these two people who had no idea that they even existed at the beginning of the show end up dying at each other's hands, potentially. That's something that's very tragic.
A lot of great scenes with Barry and NoHo, and you were kind of hoping maybe for one more of those instead of NoHo and Fuchs. It could have been NoHo and Barry, but oh well.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I'll always wonder what if we had gotten just a little bit more fan service, just one more conversation. But it was clear that they wanted to sidestep all of those expectations and make it a finale all its own. So,
How will you remember the show?
Oh man. I will think of it as the beginning of Bill Hader's directorial career. I think it will also be, I think now with Beef out, I think it's the beginning of, I'd say it picked up the dark comedy mantle from Vince Gilligan for sure. And I think now it's passing it over to shows like that. So I think I'll see it kind of in lineage of that. I think there's a lot of people who also want to see it as the end of the era for the anti-hero stories, but they're always so quick to say, this is the end of the anti-hero. They said that about Better Call Saul, and then Barry existed, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think those are ever going away. At the end of the day, I think I'm going to see it as a show that I'm going to be returning to frequently. I would say I'll probably watch it once a year, just because of what it was able to achieve tonally. It's such a work of art that even when the show doesn't necessarily quote unquote work, you can still appreciate its artistry, and you recognize at least it took a risk in an industry full of give me more of the same. It took a big swing. And even when it missed, it was the most interesting thing on television.
Well, I appreciate your artistry, and I appreciate all the swings you took in our conversation today. The anti-heroes aren't going anywhere because my appetite's too strong for them, and I just started my first ever Breaking Bad rewatch last night.
Yes.
My fiance has never seen it, and I always give myself, for shows I love, I give it 10 years, and I revisit it as a different person at a different phase of my life, and also you've probably forgotten a bunch of it. So I just did episode one, Jesse coming out of the window, running away from with the nude neighbor from Hank's drug raid, where Walt's in the back with the vest on. So I'm off and running. So do a little rewatch.
I'm so jealous. Oh, I'm so jealous of her for getting to see that show for the first time. That's so exciting.
She's like, is it always this stressful? As like every episode.
oh, if the pilot's stressing you out,
wait till this guy named Gus Spring shows up. But anyway, with that said, appreciate you for coming on, Spencer. You always spit it. You always have some good shit to say. I always learn a little something from you. Thank you, audience, for listening. Don't forget to follow and subscribe, and we will see you down the road. Bye.